Hello, and welcome to SoberCast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting SoberCast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, everyone. Candace, alcoholic. So thank you so much for waking up, even if you only came for the food. I appreciate it. What an amazing weekend. Before I get started, running my mouth, and it's a lot happening right now. So when I'm still is when I feel all the stuff that I'm walking through, right? So I just want you to know I'm really grateful. And it's been an amazing weekend. My host, Deanna, I guess didn't know she was reading. So he said, Deanna, and she was like, she looked at her name tag. She was like, what? And I said, I think it's you. And she's like, I said, is your last name H? She goes, yes. I'm like, go. So Deanna's been my host all weekend, and she and her husband, actually, it's like a duo, have been absolutely amazing and exquisite. And you know, and then there's just the peeps at my table. They have provided comfort and security and familiarity and friendliness and love. And that's important. And then my friend Sharon. Sharon and I were also sober sisters for a long time because Clancy sponsored both of us. And Sharon's been my friend longer than that. You know, and so, and Paula, you know what I mean? Just was going through some stuff and had to talk in Atlanta, and Paula was there, and Heather, you know what I mean? Like, and Heather and I met a few years ago when I spoke in Yakima, and which apparently has a huge drug problem. Anyway, so I'm like, if ever I don't stay sober, guess where I'm moving? Anyway, so... But I want to thank, you know, Dave and Dave and everyone who has had a part in putting this together. What we get to do is we get to come in and just sit down. We get to come in and unload. We get to come in and just be and absorb and receive and exchange energies. But behind the scenes, you know, their crew is working tirelessly to make sure that's all we have to do, that we don't have to worry about anything else. And so for that, let's start off by giving them a huge round of applause. So, again, Candace Moore, alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 16th, 1995. It's the only date I have ever had. And that means that over the past 27 years, I have been willing to surrender behaviors and beliefs that don't support me staying here consistently. That's a huge word for someone like me. The only thing I've ever done this long, or longer actually, is stay alive and stay sober. Everything else has been start, stop, or get rid of it, do something new. You know what I mean? And so I'm so grateful for strong sponsorship. I'm grateful that my feet have been trained in Alcoholics Anonymous, not my mouth, my feet. It's a difficult time for me right now. I have made some decisions and they have just caused me a lot of pain. And so it was important for me this weekend to just connect. So you would see me outside a lot because I need, and I talk to everybody. You know what I mean? And so, like, I met Maggie, who was feeding the feral cats, and I feed feral cats, and I was like, yay. So then I asked my host to bring me cat food so I could feed the cats, and then I met this guy, Steve. I thought he was looking for the cats, and he was looking for the homeless. I was like, oh, I work with the homeless. You know what I mean? It was like, yay. And then I met this group, I think the Bozos. They're an online group. And, yay! So they're online, and they all decided to meet at this conference in person. You know what I mean? And so, right, I know. It's just been all these amazing experiences. And so what happens is I'm really angry with my higher power. I'm pissed off. And I know that my higher power didn't do it, and I don't care. I don't care. And so it would be wonderful to get a speaker on Sunday morning who's like, no, it's not what we're doing. And so Because I feel like this. I'm going to talk about 10, 11, best believe. You know what I mean? But I feel like this. So if you're I'm going to say God. I call the spirit, but say God. You're God. I'm me. You're infinite. I'm limited. And I'm saying, yes, I did this, but I need you to help me out. Why you can't help me out? Right? And so then it's like, well, what does that look like? And so that's why the way I'm going to do 10 and 11, I want to walk you through the first nine, because 10 for me is inclusive of the preceding steps, right? There's no 10 without one. I hear people say a lot of things that aren't in my book. It's, you know, my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That doesn't say I live in 10, 11, and 12. I live in 1 through 12. I can't get to 10 without 1. And so for me, with what I'm walking through, is how do I surrender? What else do I need to let go right now? There's something that I have to surrender, and I don't know it because it's in my blind spot. That's why I need to have relationships that are honest. That's why I need to tell people, Ellen is not here. I knew she was flying out this morning. Ellen and I have traveled together for years. I love her. And I said, you know, I just feel like I really need to connect with you. I don't do Al-Anon, but I'm actually a trauma speaker outside of AA, but I need to connect with you. But I love her spirit. You know, the last time I saw her, we were speaking together in Crested Butte in 2019. She had lost her daughter and her husband. And I saw her walk through that, and she was gracious the whole weekend. The reason I am sharing with you, because I just happened to be talking this morning, but you have to understand that there are people sitting amongst you right now who are in pain. And that's why when I come to a meeting, it's not about me just sitting in my room. I have to come out. I have to talk. I have to engage. You don't know when you might be the knot at the end of someone else's rope. I have a sponsor. I had her for a year, but I knew her my whole sobriety. She was amazing. Sharon knew her. Amazing woman. Took her life at 36 years sober. She didn't suffer from depression, but something was going on. She was an active member. She was well-loved, well-respected, an amazing spirit. And I got the call, and I was like, what? And so what I'm taught is I just have to stay one more day, because everything could change one more day. And I've been here before. You know, and if you are privileged to stay sober, you will get here. This is what happens. As I continue to grow, I have to be willing to shed and let go. And so I have to hit a bottom. I've hit different bottoms in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so the question is, what do I need to surrender? You need me to give you my business? I don't want to, but okay. You know what I mean? But I don't want to. But okay, but I don't want to. You know what I mean? And that's what's happening. That's why I'm in pain, because that's the conversation that's going on. Like, I'm surrendering, but I know you don't want me to do that, right? That's how I write. So when I got sober, and I'm not going to take you through my story, because I'm going to take you through the steps, which is my story. So I got sober. I am 55 years old, and I got sober at 28. I looked way older then than I do now. And way, you know what I mean? So Alcoholics Anonymous, AA is the fountain of youth, right? Because I was getting, I was rocking that. I was rocking the, what's the word? What can I use? The shriveled look when I came here. And it was not on trend. And so I got sober. I was missing my front tooth. And that's because I shared an opinion. It was not supported, right? Yeah. Shared a little something that wasn't supported, and I was bald-headed. And it's not as big of a deal when I say it now, because I cut my hair short, because I'm in menopause. That's a whole other thing. And menopause is the devil. I just want you to understand that. Ha-ha, no. It's like the devil, yeah. So you go through some, and you're like, you know, when I used to work in corporate America, so 3 years ago I started my company, but I was in corporate for a long time, and, you know, and I worked with different teams, and so, you know, sometimes they were a lot younger, and they don't really know how old you are, because it's not what you're talking about, but all of a sudden you're in a meeting, and you just start, like, dripping sweat, you know what I mean, dripping sweat, and so they're like 30-something, they're like, what's going on, you're sweating, you know what I mean, and you can't flip them off and say, mind your business, you just say, It's a little hot in here. And so, but they're like wearing parkas, you know? And so, so I got sober. I was bald headed because I would drink and enhance my drinking with just a couple of things that kept me up for 8-9 days at a time. And so I was hyper focused during that period. And just the way I lived, so I was 96 pounds, I was bald-headed because things were living in my hair, and people always ask, they say, well, maybe you were drunk and loaded, and that wasn't really happening, and I'm like, you know, when you live on the streets, because at the end, I was living on the streets, when you live on the streets and one of your friends invites you to hang out, okay, and if your friend lives in a bush... And you go in the bush, well, bugs live in bushes. And so when you're in the mold, you don't really, it's not really a problem. You know, it's very inclusive, the environment. But my reasoning is when I leave the bush, they're like, you know, I think they jump on, they're like, freedom, we got to go out, right? And so I think they were like with me, like they were like, eh. And so I would get drunk and they would come alive and I'm like, no, you're disruptive. If you're gonna stay, be quiet, you know, chill out, get in my way. And so what I did is I took a group conscience. I wasn't even in AA, I didn't even know, but I took a group conscience and that man, I set him down, you know, and I said, I know you're up there. I know you're up there. You can stay, but I'm gonna sterilize you. And so I would pour rubbing alcohol because my another friend, by friend I mean someone I just met but totally felt close to, my friend said that rubbing alcohol will sterilize anything. I was like, thank you, right? When your friend and her drunken infinite wisdom gives you pearls, you take them. And so, and I would pour it and it was very soothing in the beginning. They were like, yay, rubbing alcohol, yay. And then they were cool, they were submissive, okay? It felt as if I were walking along the beach. You know what I mean? Like it was a feeling of renewal, the rubbing alcohol on my scalp. And then after a while, they just got aggressive and I had to get aggressive. So I took a pair of scissors. I cut off all of my hair and then newcomers, half measures avail us nothing. So I took a shaver and I shaved it to the scalp. You know, I mean, what would you do? And, and I would wear T-shirts on my head as if they were fashionable turbans, making my own statement. And so so that's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, right? 96 pounds, bald-headed and toothless. What? And so... and the beauty, and I know this is shocking, no one wanted what I had. Right? No one wanted what I had. Except one. There's always one, isn't there? Yeah. You could come in limping with a patch, and they'll be like, hey. And so you know what I'm talking about. So by the time I came to you at 28 years old, if that's the sum total of every effort that I've expended, that meant that I was in a relationship that wasn't working. So alcohol is an abusive relationship if you are an alcoholic. And the thing about it is, I will call it everything except the truth when I'm not ready to leave it. It says I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I can't do what you do. I can't do it successfully. I can't drink with impunity. And now at 27 years sober, anyone I sponsor, it doesn't matter how long they're sober, must go through all 12 steps with me. I don't believe in, well, I know you did the steps with someone else. I don't know what you did with them. I don't even know if they know the book. I know a lot of people who have a lot of babies who don't know the steps. That's what I know. So before you start talking about your time, I need to see your actions. I need to see what we're working with. What's your understanding of the inventory? There's a resentment, a fear, and a sex inventory. If you keep talking to me about one, that means however you were taken through it, you didn't go through this process. I can't have the obsession expelled if I'm not going through the process. The only reason that I'm still here, that I'm not jumping off of a bridge, is because I believe that this program works. I have walked through so many things self-imposed. I know that the pain, I mean, like I told you, I know, I don't care. I need to go away. It's enough now. Okay. You know? And so when I think about step one, and just a huge, huge thank you to each and every one, especially when I come into you know, a meeting or a conference, and I'm in the state, because I've been in the state for about probably longer than 3 weeks, but 3 weeks when it really just hit, right? When it really just like hit, and it just started, it was like one thing after the other, and I just like can't catch my breath, you know? And like this, the fear is just breathing fear. And my sponsor said, make fear your friend. And so I was like, okay, look, fear, you're tripping. I'm gonna need you to calm down. You want some water? Let's go to the kitchen. You know, so I started talking to fear, and we're cool. And so it was fine, because I said, spirit has our back. And then more stuff happened, and I stopped believing that spirit had my back. So now it's just fear. And so I can't say to fear, spirit's going to take care of it, because I'm just like, well, I don't understand what's going on. So I'm just like, I got nothing. And so I start praying to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's happened before, too. So I want to read a couple of things. So in step one, in the 12 and 12, so I take my babies through the big book until we get to step six and seven. Then we go into the 12 and 12 because it just requires more than those two paragraphs. You understand? Because in step six, when you talk about objectionable, when I come into you and I am in untreated alcoholism, a lot of things that are objectionable now were not objectionable for a long time, sober. So I have to stay here. This is a continual process of healing, right, of shedding layers. And so in step one, it says, under the lash of, I'm on page 24 in the 12 and 12, under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA, and there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift this merciless obsession from us. You were talking about a relationship I was just in. I was just in a relationship with the bottle, and you're saying that if I'm ready to do anything, you will lift this merciless obsession. I'm in a relationship with something that shows me no mercy. Yet I'll almost die defending my right to keep it. How many people do I know that I love that if I could get them sober, if I could give them a limb to get them sober because they have kids, I would, but I can't. And they will defend their alcoholism, but they're not saying I'm defending my drinking. They're saying, I don't see why I have to do all that. I don't see why I have to get to a meeting early. Why can't I come 1 minute before the meeting starts and leave 1 minute after? Because this is a way of life. A way of life, you don't just slide in and slide out. You immerse yourself in it. I'm not just coming in 1 minute because I'm trying to get mine. That's why I was shriveled up. I was trying to get mine. I'm a taker. You told me that. You said if you want to stay sober, you have to become a giver. I didn't even understand what you're talking about. I was like, what? I was like, Deanna, what? That was so awesome. She was like, I wasn't told of this look. That was so awesome. And so, it says under the lash of alcoholism, that's how I came to you. And that's how I hit bottom. The bottom I'm in now under the lash. What is my alcoholism looking like? When I take a woman through the steps sober, we're not talking about, if you're 17 years sober, you can't keep telling me what you used to do. I need to know what you're doing right now that has caused you the pain that you are in. Alcoholism is a now illness. What secrets am I keeping? But it doesn't come as secrets. It comes as not your business. So I have to have a sponsor I can tell everything to. If there's something I'm doing that I can't share with the people I sponsor and my sponsor, then I don't need to be doing it. That's my rule of thumb. I developed that after a lot of pain, right? And so you say under the lash of alcoholism, that means that this is not a partnership. Under the lashes, I'm getting my butt kicked. I'm in pain, so if I'm in something or I'm in a behavior, because we drink behind the actions we take, not behind the thinking, the illness centers in our thinking. So if I have a thought and I follow it up, my thoughts have been so dark. Just dark, you know? Just painful. And so I say, but today I'm not going to do anything. Today I'm going to call one more potential client. Today I'm going to post on social media. No one follows me on Twitter. You know, I even know why I post on TikTok. You know what I mean? And so But today I'm gonna fight for my life. Today I'm gonna fight for my life. What are you gonna do today that honors your recovery, that gets you in touch with your physical sobriety? Right? Are you done? If you're hurting, what do you need to surrender? What do you need to surrender? And then in step two, I come to believe that a power greater than myself, I caught that. It doesn't say come to believe that I can restore me to sanity, that a power greater than myself, I need to get clear on what that power is. What does that look like? What do I need in a relationship that will build me, that will empower me, that will allow me to expand, to breathe? Right? Being restored to sanity for me is being restored to principled living. That's what sanity looks like. It looks like principled living, because insanity is when I'm doing everything. I have no integrity. You can't trust me. I can't trust me. And so a higher power, when we're sober, takes on many forms. It could take on money, your man, your woman, your trans friend, whatever. Right? Defending your right to keep this. If I have to defend my right, then it's not something I need. It's not spirit ordained. And so in order for me to complete step two, I have to actually take the rest of the steps. That's how step two is actually completed. Because if you look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you are reading We Agnostics, which is the beginning of step two, step two doesn't end until page 60. Right? Page 60. And you know what's on page 60? The A, B, and C's. And it ends with God could and would if he were sought. But before I get there, I've read all 12 steps. That means in order for me to be restored to sanity, I have to continue on with the steps. And so there's this other thing. I'm going to read something out of the big book, but I want to read this in step two. On page 32 in the 12 and 12, it says, to clergymen, doctors, friends, and families, the alcoholic who means well and tries hard is a heartbreaking riddle. To most AAs, he is not. There are too many of us who have been just like him and have found the riddle's answer. The answer has to do with the quality of faith rather than its quantity. This has been our blind spot. We supposed we had humility when really we hadn't. We supposed we had been serious about religious practices when, upon honest appraisal, we found we had only been superficial. Or going to the other extreme, we wallowed in emotionalism and had mistaken it for true religious feeling. In both cases, we had been asking something for nothing. This is the read of the century, right? The big book and the 12 and 12 does not play. People talk about, you know, my sponsor's like, well, it's not what you said, sponsor, it's your tone. I'm like, no, it is what I said, and I don't care about my tone. And so, you know what I mean? My tone. And so when you talk about tone, this is tone. Is this not tone? I'm not even done. Wait a minute. It says, the fact that we really hadn't cleaned house so the grace of God could enter and expel the obsession, in no deep or meaningful sense had we ever taken stock of ourselves, made amends to those we had harmed, or freely given to any other human being without demand for a reward. We hadn't even prayed rightly. We had always said, grant me my wishes instead of thy will be done. The love of God and man we understood not at all. Therefore, we remain self-deceived and so incapable of receiving enough grace to restore us to sanity. Come on now. Do you understand me? Those are the steps. That's what it just took me through. I hadn't done an inventory to clean my house. I'm asking you for something, but I'm in a dirty house. I can't even let you all the way in because I got all these secrets here. Because there's dishes in the sink, laundry all over the floor, right? And so in step two, it talks about the realm of the spirit. The realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding. It is open, we believe, to those who earnestly seek. I remember that because when I was going through, when I came out, they're like, oh, what does she mean? I mean, I'm a lesbian. Yep. So when I came out, it was very difficult. I didn't want to be gay. No. Why? I'm going to go to hell. I don't want to go to hell. You know what I mean? Because I had all these religious beliefs, and there may be some of you that have them now. I get it. But that's not the truth, and that's not my truth. My truth is that I'm created in the exact divine image of my Creator. And I had to go, it was step two. This is why you have to stay in the big book and have a sponsor that keeps you in the book, not running their mouth about randomness, but like send you to the book when you have a problem. You know what I mean? Your opinions won't keep me sober, but this book is what has saved my life. And so I didn't want to be gay. I was dating a guy. I was dating a few of them. You know what I mean? And they were all named Mike. Keeps things simple. And so... true story. And so my sponsor... I was in a rehab, I was in sober living, but it was lucrative, turns out. So this the last Mike, because I had to get rid of the other two. So I met this Mike at the gym, minding my own business, he's well established and just he wants to see me do well, you know. Supportive. And so I was talking to my sponsor, and I was like, I really like him, and she said, you're too angry. No, you don't. You don't like men and you don't like women. And I'm like, what? And she said, She said, you're using him. I said, I'm not. Oh, no. I said, I was using those guys, but I got rid of them. I like him. And I'd done an inventory, and I suspected that this wasn't the way I wanted to go. I've not been with the guy sober. No. I've just dated them, and they were generous to me. And so anyway, so I was talking to my stepmom. My stepmom's gone now. That was my last bottom 5 years ago when she died, and I lost my faith then, too. And so... I said, I want a diamond. And she said, we're just talking. She's a normie and loves AA for what you guys have done for me. And she said, oh, Michael probably get you a diamond, but he'll probably get it for Christmas. It was October. And I said, Christmas? You mean I have to be nice to him for that long? Because they had been telling me I was using him. And I was like, no. The reason I got rid of the other two, not got rid of, released, is because... my sponsor kept talking to me, and she was like, what did you do today? I remember, I'm in sober living, and I don't have a job. I said, I went shopping. She said, oh, really? How? I said, oh, Mike came and gave me a few $100. She goes, which Mike? She knew I was dating two. And I said, Italian Mike. And she goes, oh, I guess that's okay. Pause. It's never okay when they pause. She said, I guess that's okay if you're a prostitute. You know how you do the Matrix? I said, I'm not a prostitute. I didn't even touch him. I didn't even kiss him. They just want to give me money. She said, Candace, if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to keep getting what you've always gotten. And that meant drunk. She said, prostitution is not just a physical act. Prostitution is when you are in a relationship for gain of any kind. When your feelings are not reciprocal. I didn't know that. I'm an adult woman. I did not know that. I honestly didn't know it. Because I come from a place of, you need to look cute and get your money, period. And so that's why I let the other two go. And then I meet this guy. I thought it was under the guise of innocence. And who knows? Like, I was still there. It takes a minute. Even though we go through these steps, it takes a minute to step into the truth of who you are. To step into your value system. And so... I would talk to him about me liking women. I said, do you think I'm going to go to hell? And he said, I don't think I would pray to a God that would send me to hell. And I said, I know, but because I'm raised like this, and this is what they said. And so I was always in a big book study, and I went to that part in We Agnostics, and I said, I'm hanging my hat on this, and I came out. And I never looked back. And then I just exploited women. And then I hit, but then I hit a bottom. Don't do that. I see you judging me like that. And so I came to believe that I'm not the power, but I didn't understand that alcoholism takes different forms now that I'm sober. So it became about prestige. Prestige became the power. It became about whose arm I'm on. That became the power. And what happens is that means I'm creating false dependencies. If I don't let them go, I start getting thirsty. If you don't do, if you don't look, if I don't get. And so I have to take a third step, turn my thoughts and my actions over to what? The power I started conceptualizing into. I need a power that I can come to when I feel good, when I feel bad, when I am successful, when I feel like a failure. I just feel like I'm failing right now, and it's just painful. And how do I do a step three? By doing step four, a resentment, a fear, and a sex inventory. I created a shame inventory to part of my business. I don't do anything Alcoholics Anonymous in my business, but I created a shame inventory because there are so many people walking around in just tremendous amounts of shame. Tremendous amounts. And it wasn't fitting in the, because I work with non-alcoholics when I'm doing trauma work. And so they don't have this process, and I don't take them through 12 steps because I don't get paid for AA. But when we're doing that, like, they need to have something to do. And I give the shame inventory to my sponsees because it's not fitting in the three inventories. It's not their sex stuff. It's the icky stuff, that little, that gooey. You're like, what is that? What is that? Okay. Right? That stuff. Everybody know about the ooky gooey stuff, right? And so I have to have a sponsor who understands how to take me through the inventory. And I do the extended column in the resentment inventory, and I do an extended column in my 10th step, right? The resentment inventory, person, place, thing, or principle that's pissing me off, column two, why? When I'm in untreated alcoholism, I live in those two columns. That's all I do. What you did, what you did, what you did, what you did. But when I want to get free, I move into column three. How does it affect my self-esteem, my personal relations, my sex relations, my pocketbook, my security, my ambition? This is every area of my life. Every area of my life is affected when I'm resentful. Column four, where was I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened? I have to put that down because I want to get free. When I look at step three in the 12 and 12, it talks about if only means bondage. If only you would do this, then I would be okay. I can't wait for you. I have to be okay no matter what. You are not my truth. That's the thing about this. No matter what I'm going through, no matter how, if I have to give my business up, I will die. But you know what I mean? I'm going to do what I have to do to stay sober. I can assure you that. And so if I'm waiting for you to do this for me to be okay, I am so screwed, man. You see, people confusing love with obsession. Obsession is about power, right? I'm going to wrest satisfaction out of whatever this is. And then, you know, you remember that song, those who are older in the 80s, you're my obsession, you're my, who do you want me to be to make you sleep with me, right? Is that crazy? You know what I mean? And so when you're young, you just sing songs, and you're older, you're like, what? I'm cool as I am. You know what I mean? If you don't love all of me, you can go, right? You start doing all that once you get empowered. And so then I move into the fear inventory. I hit a bottom at 9 years sober. And so once I do a fourth, everything else is a 10th step. I hit a bottom at 9 years sober because I was slutting around Alcoholics Anonymous. I lived in low self-esteem and I didn't know it. I felt inadequate and I didn't know it. That's why I was cheating. People who feel good about themselves don't deceive other people. Period. And I was cheating with a lot of people in the room. Right? They just were like magnets, zoop, right over to me. Like, they hear me from a podium talk about hurting someone, and then they would think, I guess they could fix me. And I was like, oh, come on over. Let's see about it. You know what I mean? Then they whimper away crying. Not funny, I'm sorry. And so, don't strike me down. Anyway, so I started looking at my fears. I had to, when I hit that bottom at 9 years sober, and I, you know, a 10th step is I continue to take a personal inventory because I can't always see myself. I don't want to really look at it now because I'm sober, especially we start putting time together. Time kills more people than anything else. You start being dishonest because you have time. You don't want to tell them what's going on because you have time. And what are they going to think? They're going to think you're human and that you're a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? I have to continue to apply these steps. I'm not 27 years because I used to do the steps. I'm 27 years because I'm super active. I'm uber active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor. I have panels. I take my babies through the steps. I do an online big book workshop. We get about 178 women in my online. It's the only online meeting I do because I went back to all my in-person meetings. I do a 12 and 12. Meeting that's co-ed. The Tuesday meeting is only for women, and we break that book all the way down. And I was going to shut it down when meetings started opening up. And my sponsor, Barbara Epp, who has known me since I was new, she was my sponsor in Bellflower Big Book Group. She is my sponsor now. She's 49 years sober, ridiculously active. Ridiculous. You have to be. You can't sponsor me and not be active. You can't talk about what it used to be like. We're talking about now because my life is on the line right now. She speaks to me from the steps, the traditions, and she is fluent in the concepts. I'm not fluent in the concepts. I am fluent in the other principles. And so I wasn't doing inventories. I was 6 years sober and I fell in love. And I'd never been in love before. And I had been in relationships where people were saying, I love you. And because I wanted to be a team player, you know, I would say, I love you too, right? And I was lying, right? And so, and I don't even know that this is low self-esteem, because even though I'm sober, there's a language that I still haven't learned yet. I have to hit bottom so that so my vocabulary when I come through this is going to be extensive, right? And so I fell in love, and my partner is, my former partner is not an alcoholic, has never drank, drugged, done anything, which I should have known was never going to work anyway. And so, you know what I mean? Because you don't do nothing, like ever. I mean, I hope that you're recovered, but nothing? I don't even know. I can't speak that language. So we were in a relationship, and it didn't look like love should look. It didn't look like love looks for me today, but it actually was on par with how I had grown up with love looking. So it was verbally and physically abusive. I participated equally in both. I started the physical abuse. I used to not share that. Because, you know, you can slant it any way you want. And that means your partner walks in and people are giving her the evil eye. It's like, no, I started it. I come from a family. If I tell you to shut up, that's, I mean, now. And if you don't, I'm going to help you. And you know what happens when you hit people, they hit you back. It's a problem. So I remember my sponsor, Gloria Decker, who was the love of my life. She was everything to me. This woman was the epitome, and she loved the text, and she kept us in the text. If I were going through something, she goes, Candace, that's a 3, 6, and 7 problem. Read that. Let's talk about it. That's a 10 and a, or that's a 6 and 10 problem. Or that's a 1 and 6. 6 was always, those defects were always in there. She was like, that's da 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 and 6. And da da and 6. You know what I mean? I found that objectionable when she was saying that to me. And so so I'm in this relationship, and immediately when we are living like we're living and we're speaking to each other in the manner that we're speaking to each other, a lot of profanity, a lot of violence, and so that means a lot of secrets. That means I am jumping on planes to talk in conferences, but I'm leaving and I have long sleeves on because I have bruises. But I'm going to get up to a podium and talk to you about the magnificence of the steps and a new way of living. That contradiction, you know what happened is I started getting thirsty. I wanted to drink. And I remember Gloria telling me, Candace, leave this relationship. Candace, you are talking sober but living drunk. You have to leave. When your sponsor tells you that and you feel you have found the love of your life, clearly she's tripping. Obviously she's jealous. You know what I mean? I am so filling this, yes, with the chandeliers, yes, I should have worn more jewelry. Anyway, so, you know, Gloria had been married a long time. And at that time, they were sober a long, they were like 29 years sober. They had been married for 39 years, had known each other since they were children. They were both in AA, super active members, and they had a loving relationship. And because I'm in fear, but I have to call fear another name when I won't turn my thoughts and my actions over to the possibility that I can live differently. I couldn't do it. I am trying to wrest satisfaction. This is an obsession. I have to make this work. I have never been in love before, and now that I am, we're going to fix it. And so I started praying. That's when I want to pray. Spirit. Spirit, give me a sign. Should I stay in the relationship? The police came. Oh, no, not that sign, right? What do you do? What do you do when that starts happening? You get engaged. That's what we did. Yes. Yeah. So we got engaged, but for 6 days, but they were like really long days. Like in dog years, you know? And it was super painful to live like that. It was super painful to live like that. It was super painful to live like that. I wanted to drink so bad. Who was reading part of There Is a Solution? I thought they were going to read what I'm about to read. So since you didn't, I'm going to do it. Okay. It says on page 25, the bottom of page 25, if you are a seriously alcoholic, as I feel like church, yes, you guys are awesome. Thank you. If you are a seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return from human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go into the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other, to accept spiritual help. Here's what's interesting. The first is like this long compound sentence, and the other is like, or... You can accept spiritual help. You know what I mean? And so here's the thing about, right, because it's easy for me. Like, I mean, I'm in a painful space, so I'm going to tell you honestly where I am. But usually I'm like great, and Spirit and I are like this. And so it's easy for me to talk about me and Spirit. But my actions are, they're going to tell you. To accept spiritual help when I'm in pain, if I'm not willing to surrender, spiritual help sounds like a flimsy reed. It sounds like it's insufficient. That's all you got? There's no door three? I mean, I don't want to be in pain. I mean, need something stronger than that. There is nothing stronger than that. Spiritual help is everything. It's the only reason that I'm here. It's the reason that I'm willing to continue. When I am in this type of pain, Gloria, when I was newly sober and I would hear her talk, she would say, I'm so out because I'm so in. And I got that immediately. It, to the naked eye, looks like I'm super outgoing and blah, blah, because I'm well-trained. I'm well-conditioned to come out, to do this, to converse, to keep conversation simple, to move on. I know how to do all of that. But I have to have a spiritual source that I can go to replenish. Right? And so I don't want to blot out the intolerable consciousness of my existence. I don't want to live like that. That is suffering. They said pain is a part of life. Suffering is optional. What am I willing to let go of? What am I willing to let go of? And so when I was in that relationship, we got engaged because she thought that was going to fix it. She thought I was cheating. I was, but she thought I was cheating, which of course I denied. You must be cheating. You know what I mean? No, I'm totally cheating. Of course, yes. And so 6 days later, couldn't take it, got out of the relationship. But I'm not doing 10 steps. I'm not continuing to take personal inventory. I'm continuing to tell myself that I have this amount of time. I sponsor these amount of women. I speak at these places. I work at this job. And this is my partner. We're going to fix it. Period. And so that means I can't see as it's like a thin layer of dust initially. And then it becomes heavy because your inventory is a spiritual bath. So it just keeps piling up. And so now my pores are suffocating. That's what's going on if I'm not doing an inventory, a daily inventory, not just to see where I fell short, but what did you do? Where did you meet your own needs today? What are the areas that you kept your word? Those are important too, right? Alcoholism lives in lack and limitation, what's not going right. And so I have to be willing to speak from a place of gratitude. I stopped asking Spirit for help because I'm just so pissed. I just keep saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know what I mean? And so it was very painful. I left that relationship. And again, I wanted to drink and Gloria was dying, and so I got in another relationship 6 days later, because that's how the healing happens for me. And so they were already in a relationship. That's tricky. And they were ruining my AA reputation, so I said, get out of that relationship because you're making me look bad. And, you know, I was in so much pain. Reality shows make having multiple partners look glamorous, you know, 17 layers of weave and 14 lashes and all of that. But in reality, it's super painful to live like that. Because it told me when we started reading, right, that I've entered the world of the spirit. It says, I continue to take personal inventory. Continue is ongoing. I continue to set right any new mistakes. You know that I'm going to make mistakes. Alcoholics Anonymous is not asking me to be perfect. I am. AA is not asking me to be perfect. I'm doing that. I'm imposing all these unreasonable demands on myself. It talks, I think it's what in step seven or step six, it says it's plain the difference between a request and a demand. No, it's not. It's not obvious. The difference between a request and a demand. When you live in a state of self, what is a demand to you is a request to me. I feel like I'm asking you to do this, but I don't understand that I am imposing my fears on you. I don't understand any of that. And so it was the relationships I'm talking about, the succession of insanity. I mean, I've been insane this whole time, so the other areas of my life looked really good. But in relationships, that's where you saw the fact that I wasn't healed, that I'm still living from old ideas. That's where it's showing up. That's alcohol for me. This is what it looks like. I have to be willing to identify it. So one night was lying in bed with my partner. I wanted to drink. I wanted to die. I didn't want to be here. Gloria was dying. I didn't trust anyone. People were talking about me. And a lot of what they were saying was actually true, but I didn't like it. And so I don't care that it's true. I don't like your tone. You know what I mean? And so I looked over at my partner, and I just wanted out. And I asked her, I said, you know, if I drink, will you leave? She said, absolutely not. I will never leave you. I said, if I drink, will you drink with me? She said, yes. You understand how deep this is? She's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She will forfeit her life thinking, because I'm her obsession, thinking that if we drink together, we're going to stay together. We drink, I'm going to hit the streets. I'm going to be gone like the wind. And the only reason that we didn't drink, that my sobriety date has never changed, I define sobriety as I don't take anything at any time that affects me from the neck up. I don't drink near beer because I'm not near sober. I don't smoke marijuana with or without a doctor telling me I can. And I stabilize whatever's happening with the steps. That's a personal decision. I don't speak for your sobriety, but I have to be clear on mine. It's like people who have family members that go, you're not an alcoholic. I never really, were you ever really drunk? And so what happens, you're like, well, they don't think I'm in. It doesn't matter what they think. It matters how your spirit feels. This is a spiritual malady. And so my date did not change because that was a sober household. The next morning, Gloria was in and out of the hospital. I was 9 years sober, 6, 7, 8 years, 9 years sober. Right from that, those relationships. And I called her. She had just gotten out of the hospital. I told her what I did. She said, you don't have the right to jeopardize someone else's sobriety. Stop quoting the book and start living by the principles. I didn't like her tone. And what's funny is she said it very matter-of-factly, but it felt loud. You know what I mean? The truth is loud, isn't it? If someone is living in self-deception, it doesn't matter if you whisper it. It's going to feel loud. And so I had to start putting pen to paper because I was sorely behind. And you know, if I'm not doing 10, why would I do 11? I'm not sitting still. I'm on the move. What are you doing? Getting in a relationship. What you doing? Right? And so I didn't understand. You could never have told me that I would have wanted to drink. I was Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it says, you know, progress, not perfection.
For the others, yes.
You know what I mean? But for me, obviously, I mean, look at my program. You know what I mean? It was like that. Did you know I was super angry? I had no idea I was so angry. People were like, because they talked to me, and they're like, God, Candace, you were so angry. When I stopped, I was like, I was angry? They were like, yeah, girl, you know you was angry. I was like, no, I didn't. But apparently I was. Apparently I was hostile. I don't know. And so, the other thing is, you know, when I was showing up to work, I had to constantly be willing to put pen to paper. So by the time I got sober, here's what happened. I was working for a record label. I was really young, and I was on the trajectory to be super successful, to have my Jag and my house by the time I was 30. But I left that label at 24 because alcoholism was loud, and the grandmother who raised me died, and she had been my everything. She had also parented in a way that was suspect in hindsight, but it wasn't objectionable then because what I consider to be love was you don't ever question that person. You don't ever question anything they say. They love you, and that's all there is to it. She would say things to me like, if you're going to lay down, get paid for it. I was 9 years old. It's completely inappropriate. You know what I mean? And so I'm not thinking about, but she was the person. She was my go-to person. My mom is an alcoholic by her own admission, really big boobs, packs her pistol in her bosom. So there's a lot of things that go on if she has a problem with your tone, you know what I mean? Out comes the gun. And so coming from that dynamic, that's not why I drank. When I started drinking, I was in pain and I didn't know it until I took a drink and it took it away. I had no idea. And that's why we're talking about the language now, the language of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've entered the world of the spirit. I've entered into a different world when I am not living in accordance with the principles outlined in our text. I feel it. But the thing about it is, I'm only going to feel it for a minute or two. If I keep doing it, I become numb to it. It becomes a way of life, just like when I was drinking. When people drink, when I see them leave alcoholics, you can't get in the middle and then leave. There has to be little forfeitures. Little forfeitures. You're going to forfeit this. You're going to forfeit that. Sharon talks about it exquisitely, sliding it across the bar. What does that look like sober? What's the whiskey in your milk sober? And so I had to go back through the steps, and that's why I was talking to you about the inventory, the resentment, the fear inventory, three columns. The fear, why I have it. Column three, what would it look like if it were removed? People always say there's only two. That's how I did it for years until I hit that bottom and I was taken back through the steps. So I'm going to go to page 68, which is where the fear inventory is. It says, so column one, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. Column two, we ask ourselves why we had them, right? Column three is in the last paragraph of the fear inventory, and it says, instead, we let him, God, demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Who would I be if I didn't have this fear? The way I did my fear inventory when I was new was the fear, and then I said, what time is it? Okay. When do I need to sit down? Got it. Okay, so the way I did my fear inventory when I was new was like the fear, and then why I had it, and then I said a prayer, and nothing happened. And I don't know nothing happened because I'm not really thinking about it until I'm confronted with it, and I'm still afraid. But when I hit that bottom, and I'm fighting for my sobriety at 9 years sober, and I went back through the fear inventory as it's actually outlined, the fear, why I had it, so I'm afraid I'm too broken to be loved. Why? Because of all the things I did on the streets. Because in order to drink, when I left the record label, I moved into public relations. And so when you're in public relations, you meet a lot of clients. And so, you know, and then what happened is I met that one tooth got knocked out and people are so uppity. I remember them wanting to reduce my price, and I was like, it's not even my tooth you're after. You know what I mean? So, anyway. I'm going to move on, but I think I have a resentment against it. I'm going to have to write about it. So I'm afraid I'm too damaged to be loved. This is a very real thing, because at 9 years sober with a working knowledge of all 12 steps, active in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, if this is the true feeling I have about myself, it stands to reason I'm going to attract the type of relationships that will not honor me. Because secretly I feel I'm too damaged to be loved, and I'm not in touch with that. That's a very real fear. My fears at 9 years sober were all around that. I broke my own heart. I didn't know I felt that way about myself. And so column three is if this fear were removed, because in the third step, it says we were reborn, right? I am made anew. So if this fear is removed, who would I be? If I'm not damaged, I am discerning in the relationships I enter. I engage with partners who have like values. You notice what I'm not saying is I would or I'm going to. That's not it. If it were removed, it's gone. I'm only coming from the affirmative. I did that with what I'm going through right now, but I'm so in fear. I said, I just feel like it's all words. However, I'm taking the actions every day. It's like, okay, call one more client. Do this, you know what I mean? Mail up. When you're in debt, what do? You order a banner that's 7 feet tall. That's what I did. I'm doing a free workshop for the community. It's a whole other thing. So I started doing that. The fear inventory changed my life. And usually at conferences, if they ask, if they also have workshops, I'll do a fear inventory. Because they always say, which workshop do you want to do? Fear. Because so many people have not gone through the fear inventory like that. It changed my life. Because what's going on is I'm going to pull from what I know. If I've never been challenged to say, if you didn't have this fear, who would you be? I can't pull from it. I'm only going to pull from what I've always done, what I've always had. That's limiting. That's restricting. That's making me thirsty. And then I moved into the sex inventory. It was a lot. Whew, I was exhausted. So anyway, the sex inventory. So you're asking me all these questions. Where did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness, and doubt? This is also a part of my 10th step. Because when I'm continuing to take personal inventory, but I can't do a 10th if I have never done a 4th. Right? My friend Todd L. from Bellflower Big Book Groups, he says, I believe doing an inventory qualifies me to hear an inventory. So it's important that the sponsors I have know how to go through all inventories. If not, you're not going to know what to do with the information I'm giving you. I started answering those questions. Where did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness, and doubt? That's the sex inventory. Whom did I hurt? Where was I inconsiderate? And so that is a resume. That's a resume of my character. And it's hurtful and it's painful. But what happens is the big book always meets me where I am, and then it reaches its arm out and it says, stand up, Candace, come with me. Stand up. The next question, game changer, what could I have done differently? I could do something different? What? I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna write it. Let's see. So the next time someone slithers over to me who's in a relationship and asks me to hang out, hook up, whatever it is, I get to say, no, thank you. I'm not disrespecting myself today. I didn't know that a woman who had been on the streets doing the things I did got to say no, thank you. And I didn't know that I didn't know. And then you asked me to outline my ideals in the inventory. I have to do that in my 10th as well, because remember, I'm growing in understanding and effectiveness. When my babies do a 4th step, they write the inventories. I also give them the shame, which is not AA, but it's absolutely effective. And then I ask them to write their goals, and we get timelines. We go through each goal, and I put it in my calendar, follow up on this date. If you want to get your master's, then you need to start reaching out to schools, right? If you want to go back to school, you need to, let's get it done. And then I ask them to write the characteristics of people they find attractive. What are those values? And so what can you incorporate into your life? The inventory is not just about breaking you down. It's about breaking you open so that we can begin the rebuilding process. And when you're sharing it with me, I have a responsibility to share back. Not overshare. I listened to an inventory a couple of weeks ago. It was 6 hours, but it wasn't juicy. I mean, it was good. You know what I mean? It was thorough. But they hadn't done the stuff I had done. I was like waiting for it. I was like, I got it.
I'm going to give it to you.
You know what I mean? And it was like, no, no, no. And I was like, okay, I can share. You know, I'm going to give you the C stuff. I'm going to give you the C stuff. I can't give you the black bag because you can't handle it, you know, and, but the purpose of someone sharing back is, you know, Clancy used to talk about it, to reduce the feelings of difference. That's the deal. And so this is how I grow in understanding. I'm talking about all the steps because this is step 10. This is what's involved in step 10. This is what the inventory is. And then I look at the defects of character. After I share it with my sponsor, they're making a list. I pretty much can spot most of my own defect at this point. You know, I'm honest about them. I get it. Okay. So I don't work on my defects. That's just more self-obsession. I cooperate with their removal. I assume a different posture. Step 6 is simply a demonstration of the areas where I lack faith. In the areas that I lack faith, I'm going to be excessive. I'm going to reach for more than I actually need because I'm coming from a place of scarcity. That's what step 6 is. It's the areas that I'm living in scarcity. And based on that are the defects that you will see most active. And as I continue to build my faith, because remember, everything is now based on two, I've surrendered. And so this is what the surrendering process looks like. It requires all of the other steps. And so in 7, I say, okay, thank you. I know you're going to do this for me, and I'm going to cooperate. I'm going to cooperate. I'm going to cooperate. So I start doing another inventory in 8, right? Because the list that I'm making in 8 is not about the people that are, it's not exclusive to the people who were on my list when I was in 4. The inventory that I'm making in 8 are people that I have harmed, some of them from my inventory, but some of them, they did nothing to me. You just wanted to love me. That's all you wanted to do, but you didn't understand I was broken. You didn't understand that I was coming from disillusionment and terror. You didn't understand it. And so I made you my higher power, and it destroyed everything. Because I will exploit you like no one's business. I'm well-spoken, but I am ruthless. And the book talks about there are certain things we can't, there's some things we can't make right. It doesn't mean that we don't give it our effort. It doesn't mean that we say, oh, there's nothing I can do. There is something I can do. There's a reason I do all the stuff I do outside of alcohol. I work with a lot of organizations outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I've done so much that I have to always look for another way to give back, another way to give back. I make food. You know, I go to Costco. I make lunches, and I just pass it out when I'm in a hard place, especially when I feel like I don't have a lot of money. That's when I have to go make lunches. I have to go pass them out because I used to be homeless. When I first got my apartment, I would open the cupboards and I would just look and I would be like, yeah. Then I would go sit down. Then I would get back up. Then I'd open the refrigerator door and I would smile. It was a big deal. Please never let me get to a place where I walk in my kitchen and food in the cupboards is not a big deal. Let me never get to that place. It doesn't matter what I'm going through right now because I have to have things put into perspective. This is a disease of perception. And so in my 10th step, I have to be willing to, it says, set right any new mistakes. So my amends is never, I'm sorry. It is, I want to amend my behavior. This is the exact nature of my wrong. Is there anything else I've done that I'm unaware of? Because I do so much. I think I'm just making it right for this. I've stepped on your toes 17 different ways. And I need to honor you and give you that space to tell me, what is it I've done? And then I ask you, how can I make this right? I assure you, I will not repeat this behavior. It is not what you deserved, and it's not the woman I desire to be. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous holds me accountable to the woman I say I am. I remember my mom is a child murderer. She rapes and kills children, takes their bodies apart, puts them in cement. And because of that, she's going to die in prison. And sidebar, I used to work for one of the publications that covered her trial. And they just didn't know because of who I am in Alcoholics Anonymous. But you think about things like that. You know, every day of the years I worked for that, and I was super successful and like, you know what I mean, winning awards and all this. But I could go up and look up the past stories on my mom, right? And And so when I was, I think 20 years sober, I left that publication because I was walking across. My name was on the board. I just got another award. I was walking across the lobby to the elevator, and this voice said, "What you do serves no purpose." And I was just like, well, that's harsh. And so, but the funny thing is, I had been like wrestling with it because I knew it wasn't what, I mean, like, I was making a ton of money, and I loved what I did, but I loved the effects of what I did. I loved, you know, the prestige of the publication I worked for and the credit cards that came with it and the awards and then the more bonuses and then the more bonuses. And it's not who I'm called to be. I do very non-glamorous work. I am a trauma workshop facilitator. That is what I do, emotional trauma. That's what we talk about. And that's what we address. And there's a process and a method that I have developed, and it seems to be effective for people. Licensed psychologists take my workshop. You know? And so at that time, I had left and I had a very nice savings because I was going to buy a house. And I said, if you stay here and you buy this house, you'll never leave because you'll be too afraid. And I don't want to be miserable. I have worked with so many people who have been at companies for years, but they are unhappy people and they're so afraid because they're all caught up into it and I don't want to start over. So many people don't want to start over that they just stay miserable. I started my company at 52, and so the fear that I keep putting on paper is like, did I wait too late? Is that why? Did I wait too late? And but I'm going to keep trying, and I'm going to give it everything I got till I don't have any more. And so my mother was coming up for parole, and what time did I stop? 10:15 or 10:30? 10:15? Okay, I thought it was 10:15. So I've talked more about 10 than 11. I'm sorry, just forgive me, but I had to be where I am. Do you understand what I mean? That's where we're at. And so so my mom was coming up for parole, and I wrote a letter to keep her in because my mother can't come out. She's killed two children, ages 2 and 8. And I was like, how can you even think about letting her out? And they said it would help if you actually came. And so I remember it was a few months, and I would wake up in the months preceding, I would wake up throwing up with anxiety. They diagnosed me bipolar, manic, depressive, suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome, and I treated naturally. That was a choice, had nothing to do with AA. It was a choice I made when I was newly sober. I said, if I take this, will it make my mother not be a murderer? They said no. Will it make me not have worked the streets? They said no. And someone said, try the steps first. If you need to take something after, do that. I said, okay. So for me, I've not needed it. And when I go through hardcore depressions, exercise is I'm actually training for the Spartan race right now. And you wouldn't know it because I've been eating my butt off this whole weekend. You know what I mean? Emotional eating is sometimes permissible. And so in the months that came up, I was doing a lot of inventory. And an inventory for me, I do the extended column. So if I'm using resentment, if I'm using sex, if it's fear, I use those as their outline. But when I do a resentment inventory, as I had against my mom, you know, I go through the four columns, the who it is, the why, how it affects every area of my life, because every area is affected, and where I'm selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened. And then there's a fifth column, what are my defects of character? This is how I do a 10 step, right? The fifth column is my defects of character. The sixth column is what can I do differently? And then I added a seventh, and it came out of prayer, and that is three acts of forgiveness. And the reason that came to me in actually meditation is because I would do inventories and see where I had been at fault, and it didn't change the fact that I don't like you. And I did not want to live in that, like I need a shift. And so three acts of forgiveness, meaning if we never had any type of disagreement, if I just saw you as I were just meeting a new friend, how would I behave? What are those three acts? So I'll give you an example. I had resentment against the police. There was a verdict being read, like, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole politics, but I was like livid. And I know what I want to share before I leave. And so So anyway, I had this resentment and I was creating this thing, and it's a motivational thing. And so like I couldn't write because I was so filled with hatred. And so I was like, well, this isn't going to work. So I was doing the resentment inventory against the police officers. And then we got down to the acts of forgiveness. And so the three acts, I forget what the third one is. I don't know why, but the first is every time I see an officer, I am to wave. And if I am in, wave and smile. And if I'm in direct contact with them, I must say, hello, thank you for your service. And then I forget what the third one is. And so one night I'm in the car and I'm talking to a sponsee on speaker, and I'm like, I just told her about it. And I was like, oh, there's an officer. She goes, are you going to wave? And I was like, right? So, so we're like at the red light and I'm trying to get his attention, and he keeps moving his car up. I'm trying to like get his attention and wave and say hi. He keeps moving and he won't look over. I'm like, so I'm like, put my car up. I said, this is going to make me write a whole other inventory. I'm trying to be spiritual and wave at you. You know what I mean? You know, you see me out your periphery, right? I'm so pissed off. I'm like, I'm trying to be forgiving. And so, everything is meditation. Everything is meditation. Meditation are the thoughts that guide and govern my day. Meditation is not just when I sit still. Meditation is what I've been doing all week, and that's why I walk. I walk and I acknowledge creation. I thought meditation was I had to be still, I had to do it for a certain amount of time. If that works for you, that's great. But what happens is we make things inaccessible when we say that's the only way you can do it. The book doesn't say that's the only way we can do it. Right? Sought through prayer and meditation to do what? Improve my conscious contact. So I have to do the preceding steps. I can't do step 11 without doing step 10. I can't sit down and try to get quiet when my head is racing. So I have to be willing to put pen to paper, whether it's a spot check inventory, whether it's a major inventory. I have to be willing to clean house so that I can still my spirit. I do that. I jog 5 to 6 miles. I climb the Culver City stairs. If you're ever in LA, you want to work out with me, let me know. We get it done, right? You know, I walk along here. I will dance. I do anything. Cooking is a part. I crochet. I do all different things. I color. I usually travel with a coloring book. I do all these things so that I can still my spirit, so that I can hear constructive imagination. So it was meditation that told me when I got sober, I had given birth to my daughter. I had her, she was born addicted because of how I lived. Her name is Serenity. And I had her for 3 days in the hospital, and then she was adopted. She wasn't adopted immediately, but by the time I got sober, she was adopted, and I never saw her. But I always knew that I had a child. And so when people would talk about having children, I would just talk about my cats. And that's a source of shame, you understand? But I would celebrate my daughter over the years by gifting other individuals in honor of my daughter. Every year I would pray and I would be directed on what to do to honor my daughter in her absence. My daughter found me almost 3 years ago. She found me on Ancestry.com because a member of my old home group in the Pacific group had found her biological parents, and I thought maybe my daughter could find me, and she did. Her name is Serenity. And her name is still Serenity. And so I met her. She said, do I have any other siblings? I'm like, oh, no. That was painful. And so I may have been loaded, but it was still painful. And so and she said, well, you're a grandmother. And I was like, what? And so overnight, my daughter's back into my life. I met her mom, who's an amazing woman, an amazing woman. My daughter's never been abused. I know what it's like to not feel safe as a child and have adults treat you as you're their adult girlfriend when you're not. She's never had that. And so my daughter, a few months after she met me, she called me. We talk all the time, but she said, you know what I was thinking? I was thinking you should do something like a motivational calendar. This woman knows that my father is a pimp. I'm sorry, retired manager. That my mom is a murderer. Because she kept saying, I want to meet my grandfather. I was like, cool, who is that? She goes, your dad. I'm like, oh, I've never used that word. So funny. So So my dad and I have a relationship as a direct result of my daughter wanting to meet him, but I had to do a major inventory, a major 10 step to get all the stuff, because even though he's been in my life, I've been politely hostile. And I had to forgive him everything, everything, all of it. Just like I wasn't in her life, he couldn't show up for me. He's an addict. He's a heroin addict. And so I said, that was so, I would, in my AA stories, like today, I would end my AA stories with her saying I should do a motivational calendar. People would be like, oh, if you did a calendar, I would buy it. But you know how people are. So you say what the prize is. They'd be like, oh, what? And so, and so I don't do calendars. I have a workbook, right? There was a guy I met. He was supposed to come over this morning and buy the workbook. And anyway, that's all right. Other people bought it. It's not a problem. And so, I was in the shower one day because my head says, I can't do that. You always say, start here. I was in the shower. Spirit says, do the calendar. I said, I can't. And Spirit says, 12 inspirations. So that's when I was praying, right? I would pray over everyone. I would pray and then I'd write, then I'd pray. And then everything I needed to know, I was shown. Like someone would have a small business and they would teach me how to do the postage. And I got Photoshop. It was like this whole thing. And so I published the Serenity 2021 calendar. And then I published last year the Serenity 2020, and it sold out, like I'm talking all over. People in Holland, Amsterdam, Australia, L.A., everywhere. They were so excited about the story and what the calendar stands for. And so what's happened this year, because I thought I was going to get a certification so that I could work with a particular agency with what I do in trauma, and so I neglected all the other stuff I was supposed to be doing, and I published the second volume, my workbook, late, and I went into debt, and so I can't do the calendar. And that's what, you know what I mean? And I just felt like I let my daughter down, and I let myself down, and the people are like, what do you mean? You're not going to do it, you know? And I'm just like, I can't do it. And it's okay. I'll do it next year. I just have to revamp. And so I think I've just, you know, you guys, I've just been feeling like I let myself down, and I let a lot of people down, and it's hard. And so I've been blaming Spirit. It's not Spirit's fault. It's not Spirit's fault. And so I just want to thank you for this weekend. You've been so kind to me, and I've really enjoyed making friends. And I just want you to know that if you want what we have, even when it's hard, you have to remain willing to do what we do. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.